everybody. Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. I almost said Classical Guitar Corner. Why? Because we're sponsored by Classical Guitar Corner. But we'll get to that. Right now, it's the 100th episode of Classical Guitar Insider. With me, your host, Brett Williams. But this time, things are going to get switched around a little bit. I am interviewed by two of my closest friends. Well, I mean, you know, Simon and I are okay. We're close enough. But Mike and I are super duper close. We see each other once a week. I'm the godfather to his daughter, little baby Ramona there, about a year and a half old. And Simon and I have really picked up steam. Simon introduced me to my current girlfriend, who's about to be my ex-girlfriend, Caroline. She's incredible. That's right. I'm going through another breakup. But before we get to that, seriously, she's the best. I'm not talking shit here. She's a beautiful person inside and out. And I'm literally just sad at all times about this breakup. I love this person very much. It's completely destroying me. I don't know how I'm standing. But, you know, we can adapt to almost anything. The show is actually sponsored by Simon, who's being incredibly sweet by sponsoring the show right now. I think he's kind of doing it just to support the show. I don't think he's doing it for promotional reasons. So I mean, I'm super duper wicked excited about Simon doing this. Because it's obviously he's just doing it to be a good guy. Show sponsored by ClassicalGuitarCorner.com. What is that? ClassicalGuitarCorner.com is where you can go for lessons with Dr. Simon Powis of Yale University. I threw that in there, buddy. You're going to love it. The people love it. You went to Yale. That's a huge thing. You should be proud of it. Dr. Simon Powis can give you classical guitar lessons. I don't know. He probably plays a whole bunch of different kinds of guitars. I know for a fact, actually, he plays a lot of different kinds of guitars. So go to Classical Guitar Corner for lessons with Simon. You can listen to the Classical Guitar Corner podcast, which is a very well-produced, very informative, educational podcast, which helps you with everything from performance anxiety to right-hand technique. He also has a host of materials that you can peruse once you become a member, whether they be written or in video form. That's ClassicalGuitarCorner.com. We're also sponsored by SavageClassical.com. Savage Classical has been hosting us for 3 out of our 4 years. SavageClassical.com is where you can go. It's got the best concert guitars available in the tri-state area. So this show is broken up into two parts. We're going to start out with Simon. Simon and I talk, and it's a little more formal because we're both classical guitarists. We have a shorthand when we discuss things, and we're both podcasters, so it's very well done. You can even hear the difference in the mics between when we're at Simon's house and he's interviewing me, and when we're at my house and Mike and I are talking to each other over beers. But I really would stay tuned for the Mike one because it's a lot of fun. Mike is the funniest guy I know. This isn't to say Simon isn't funny. Simon is funny. He's a very warm and intelligent presence. But Mike and I are just, you know, to me, there's nothing like listening to Brett and Mickey. And that's the original podcast, folks. It was Brett and Mickey watch commercials back in the day. I don't know if we talk a little bit about that, but I think we do. I think we get around to it. And he's a funny shit. I should say before we begin that if you don't like me, please stop listening now. I don't want to offend you. I don't want you to get tired of me. Just stop. I'm going to be back next week with a Hawaiian slack key guitarist, Makana. And that's a very, you know, that's more along the lines of an informative interview where you're going to get all the stuff that you should expect to get out of a classical guitar podcast. From right now, we're going old school, all right? We're talking about a lot of swear words. We're talking about me expressing myself, me talking about my breakup, and then me being interviewed twice, right? So, let's do it. There's been a lot of editing going on here. That took some time. And as I said, I did go through a breakup. So if you're a younger listener, please stop listening now. If you are a parent of one of my students, please understand that this is not the way that I address your children or even my adult students. This is a unique character, if you will, that I am when I'm addressing my audience on this show. And it's important for me to be as expressive as I can be and to talk as if I'm talking to a very close friend over a couple of drinks. I'm having a Bud Light right now by Anheuser-Busch, if you've ever had that. It's their lager. And just kicking back. You know, that's my bottle of champagne. Doing a little bit of lonely celebration here while I do the intro for the 100th episode. So, what do you guys want to talk about? Well, let's get, let's keep the intro relatively brief, right? I mean, you're going to hear from me plenty with these next two guys, but yeah, I am. I'm going through a breakup. This one's a little different from the last one. The last one was several years of us just being ready to move on and just being so entangled family-wise and even financially that we had a lot to work out and we really gave it a shot. Me and old Wendy, I'm talking about there. So that was one where I was ready to move on. That was more or less, you know, that was my decision, at a certain point. This one is different. This one is not my decision. I adore Caroline very much. And it's incredibly sad around here because I feel that she adores me too. But it's one of those situations where, you know, it's a unique situation, but I can't go too much into it without compromising somebody or a group of people or whatever. So out of respect for that, I will say that, you know, right now I am turning 41. I'm at a certain point in my life where I have asked for a certain level of commitment, and she is at a point in her life where she is unable to facilitate that at this time. This doesn't mean that this is a forever thing. I think that we both are open to the idea of getting back together at some point after some space. But for right now, it's just sad. All our stuff is packed up there. And, you know, I'm sitting there with my old spatula and me and my old roommate's plates. And I'm sitting in a room that's about to be occupied by my new roommate, Nick, who seems nice enough. He could be a serial killer, but we'll see. He gave the deposit on time. So he's a new local guy. And we both drink at the same bar. Shay's there, if you're a Green Pointer. It's sort of the dive bar around here. It's got the $5 Bud Light whiskey shot special. You get two of those and you're good at the end of a long day. You know, then you can go home and sleep like a baby. So, you know, we'll see. This isn't, you know, nobody has misbehaved. And nobody's like just out of love. This is just one of those, it's one of those situations. I really adore her. So, you know, I'm not going to talk any. There's no shit to talk, really. There's not much to say. Needless to say, I didn't go to the Women's March on Saturday. Now, that's not because I'm not a Me Too guy. You bet I'm a hashtag Me Too guy. What are you talking about? You know, this is not just about, this is about all of us, this movement. Because I got to tell you, I'm usually in a relationship. And usually I'm dating somebody that I'm not the only one finds attractive. So if I'm dating somebody, other people find them attractive is what I'm trying to say. You know, if I'm going to use a sentence correctly. And I have often had to send a girlfriend to work knowing that there are people at work that are going to sexualize her. And knowing that she's going to be uncomfortable with that or numb herself to it to the point where it's just accepted. And I've had people, particularly in all industries, apparently this is the case. But, you know, I've also dated people in the service industry. Caroline is one of them. And the stories that she has told and the things that I had just the expectations that we put on these girls is that they're going to allow themselves to be sexualized and that it's just not cool if they get pissed off about it. And I got, as a boyfriend, it's terrible to send somebody into these situations. And as a husband, I can't imagine. And certainly as a father, I certainly can't imagine thinking about your daughter being in the lion's den every time she's doing something that she needs to do to either survive or further her career. There's some guy that's decided that it's, you know, he's on a dating website every time he's at work. Leave the girls alone. Okay? They're not there to get hit on. You know, just if you're a guy, this is what you do. Just be cool. Be the coolest, funniest guy you can be. You know? And she'll let you know in one way or another if she's interested. But you can't just repeatedly hit on people. And certainly if she's working under you, forget about it. Leave it alone. Make it her decision. Do not hit on people at work that are working for you particularly. And if they're working with you and they're a colleague, even then, it's got to stop. We got to change this. We've got to make the professional environment a safe place for women to be in. You know, it's as simple as that. This is about Donald Trump being a total pervy piece of shit. That's not, we all know that. If you don't know that, you're lying to yourself. You know he's a pervert and you're accepting it, and that's okay. That's it. You guys are getting everything you want. So don't take, you know, what I've already lost my Al Franken. You know, that guy, and that's what I'm saying. If heads got a roll, heads got to roll. If there's got to be a little bit of bloodshed, there's some bloodshed. This is a war. You know? By electing someone like Donald Trump, we have declared war on the female gender, and I believe that. I don't think that the way that he talks about women, the way he treats women, the way he treats his wife is reflective of the way that we want to be viewed as Americans and the way that we treat our daughters and our wives. So, you know, that's why this started. And now this movement has brought to light a lot of things that needed to be brought to light. Hey, I lost Louis C.K. I lost Garrison Keillor. I lost Al Franken in this war. I love those guys. Al Franken was very formative to me as a progressive youth, reading The Lying Liars and The Liars That Tell Them, or whatever that book was. Him becoming a senator after me listening, I used to listen to him and Mark Maron and Sam Cedar and Janine Garofalo on Air America when that was a thing, on one of those giant, you know, Macs. You know, I used to watch his show on the Sundance Channel. I met him at H&H Bagels on the Upper West Side. So sad, you know. But like, if Aziz Ansari has to come out and say, you know, he didn't do something, okay, well, you said you didn't do something. We all read the article. It seems like he's in the clear. Seems like he didn't do anything wrong. And we move on. And I understand that's a case that we can latch on to and go like, well, you know, people's careers are getting, you know, let them cry into their, all these men, even the men I like, are all people with millions upon millions of dollars to bury their tears in. You know, who gives a shit? Go cry into your, you know, Porsche, Aziz. You're fine. You're going to be fine. You can make another dumb joke about it in your next act. Hopefully one without too many references to your time with Kanye West. Sorry, I'm not a big... Anyway, so the thing is that we got to support these people who are going out there and spending the time to do the hard work. I'm really sorry if I've offended any of my listeners who are conservative. I've got a lot of conservative people I love. This isn't about that. You guys should be perfectly fine. You're getting your way. All right. My taxes are going up as a New Yorker. And if I move back to California, it'd be the same case. And, you know, your taxes are going down because you're rich and you're somewhere else. So, and you're getting a, and whatever's left over in the government is apparently being put towards a giant wall. So everybody on the right should be very happy right now. Please don't mind me liking my Al Franken. Okay. I'm very disappointed in him. For even playing on the, you know, on the edge with the ladies, but I, you know, that's all I'm saying. Anyway, now I'm going off on a rant. Doesn't matter. The point is that I needed to go off on a rant because this is the 100th episode. So please forgive me, everybody who I've offended, you know, but I figured today we could talk about politics. We could talk about women. We could talk about a breakup and I could say, fuck. And that's all because I am having my own celebration of all things Classical Guitar Insider. So, you know, if we're upset in any way, we can stop listening right now. But if you're into it, here's my time with Simon Powis, and I'm going to follow it up with my time with Mike Gentile. If you get tired of listening to me and Simon, fast forward to Mike. It's a completely different sort of tone. Simon and I are having coffee at about 1 p.m. or 12:30 p.m. on a Tuesday, and Mike and I are having beers and shots at 8 o'clock on a Saturday. So I hope you enjoy this. I want to thank everybody for listening. I also want to announce that we have a membership option available now. You can go to brettwilliamsmusic.com and you can go to the podcast section. And on the right, you can sign up to be a member for $5 a month. If you sign up to be a member for $5 a month, I'll send you starting out. You can just write me and say, I would like to receive this. After becoming a member, and I will be happy to send you an MP3 of the full interview with me and Mike and me and Simon to start out with. And about once a month, I'll be releasing members only content. That'll be in the form of some things that I send you either over email or in the mail. And it'll eventually be its own dedicated feed on iTunes. A members-only podcast sort of a situation where there'll be some outtakes, there'll be some unique interviews, maybe, you know, just me ranting for 35 minutes. I've always wanted to do that. I'm always happy to do that. But thank you for your support. Brett Williams Music to support the show. Remember to visit Classical Guitar Corner to get lessons from Simon. And remember, savageclassical.com for all your guitar needs. Here's the rest of the show. Let's hear from Simon Powis, and then we're going to transfer seamlessly into my interview with my buddy Mike Gentile.
Well, I guess the attractive thing about people who've established themselves is, what's the secret? What did you do? What's the insight you can offer? And we're sort of looking for those. Whereas In the end, you find out it's usually just sustained hard work or a bit of luck.
Yeah.
And so you just find out about them, the person, and that's usually the unique thing they can offer, because there is no secret.
There is no secret, but it is sustained hard work.
Yeah,
that carries through to everybody who does everything and is you know, at least mildly successful at it.
I'm interested in asking about some of the experiences before and after the interviews, as we would have heard it as listeners, because in my experience, definitely afterwards, I start actually getting some great stories coming up. maybe the interview was whatever, it was fine. And but then they, like, as soon as you go click, and then they relax and they're like, oh, this guy's a jerk. And you're like, wow, I want to record this. It's really compelling.
Yeah, they love it.
Not the gossip type stuff, but it's just people relax. And I've used that technique.
That is exciting at first though, isn't it? Like when you're first doing this, the afterwards where you're like, wow, like, I know some serious shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Is there anything that, have you ever censored things, or are there things that were a bit contentious that were said?
Yeah. There's lots of guests that have wanted at least one thing edited out. And I used to say, like, at the beginning, I don't really do edits, because I heard that Mark Maron doesn't do edits. And I was like, well, if he doesn't do edits, then I'm not going to do it. And then after a while, I was just like, look, I want people to feel comfortable. I want them to feel like they can share stuff. And I tell them that I can edit stuff out now. But there was one case where it got really bad. There was one guest who came on and she was just like, just showed up to the apartment super offended that I didn't go to her concert the night before. Just pissed, angry. And she was just like, how are you gonna, How are you going to interview me if you don't even know my music? And I told her, I said, look, I saw you in 1997. You know, I've researched you. Your album came out. You know, I don't want to say when her first album came out because then I give away who I'm talking about. But yeah, she just was furious that I didn't go to the show. And then I got over that. I got through that. It was the hardest thing because I was a pretty, you know, young interviewer at that point. I think we're talking about, I don't know, just 30 episodes in or something, or 20 episodes.
You realize
in.
You are triangulating this interviewee.
Am I really?
I'm putting on my Sherlock hat with the process of deduction.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do the math, I'm not trying to tell you who it is, but I also think it's an important story to tell because we're kind of talking about the podcasting element.
Right, right.
And what you do when you're interviewing somebody. And this is a story that I told and then I deleted because I was, you know, legally threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to avoid that because I don't want to have to defend myself, but at the same time, you know, it's an important story to tell because now there's a lot of people trying to podcast. There's a lot of people that are, I think there's going to be a lot of guitarists, young guitarists that are going to be doing what we're doing. I think most of them will probably try and have some sort of a platform to speak on the internet. So as an interviewer, it was terrifying because this person clearly hated me. And was just complaining about everything. The light in the apartment, just everything. The light in the apartment was not unlike a Russian torture chamber, is what was said. Did I tell you this story?
You've told me personally. I didn't know if you've told it on air before.
So she was just like not into it. And then I kept on... I just stuck with it, and I was kind of like giggling and laughing, and then after a while, you know, I charmed her and I got her to really like me, and then she listened to the episode when it came out, and there was a long intro about just how I spent my anniversary with my ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the intros used to be a lot, just, you know, not, I don't know if it was long or whatever. It was just something. She was like, this is the dumbest thing. I don't want this. You know, you need to take this out. And do not say anything about me on Facebook or whatever. And I, you know, I'll sue, just go, went off on it. So I just pulled it. But that was a rough one.
Yeah.
That was a rough one. And then there's also plenty of cases where people will, you know, because you get people to trust you. And not in like a slimy way. It's just, that's the only way to really make this work. So well, people do trust you. And at the end of the interview, they feel like they've made a new friend. A lot of these people are pretty isolated people that maybe don't have a lot of friends, you know, and maybe don't get a chance to just sort of shoot the shit with somebody in an open way. And then after the show, yeah, they're revved up and ready to talk.
Well, one of the interesting things about this format, and in this scene, you were not a flag bearer, a vanguard. Carved out a new path in the way that the virtue of what you do.
I don't mean to call myself a vanguard. I just thought that was the word you were looking for.
I was looking, you know, a flag bearer, I suppose. You carved out a new path in that you allow us to see uncurated versions of people's character. You know, if someone has to go to the point where they're emailing and threatening this and that to curate how they come across,
right?
That's got to be a full-time job, and I don't envy that.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, that's hard to control. And I think it's very clear through your interview process that we're getting the real deal of these people. And
it's important.
I don't remember anyone that came across poorly. You know, it's sort of like you do actually, you're very gracious in that you let people shine.
Even this person came off, I thought, very, very friendly and very nice. Absolutely. I thought she sounded great.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of aspects, particularly about her playing, that I love, you know, as an artist, I think. There's
but
a lot
it
there.
Is different than the old BBC radio style where it's segmented, it's edited, it's very sort of usually puff piece kind of things. You know, it's promotional. It's promotional material.
It's promotional material, yeah.
Whereas this is... digging into someone's personality and character, and that's scary.
It is scary.
It can be scary. And you know, kudos to the people in the beginning. It was like Julia Crow and Rupert Boyd, I think, was early on.
Yeah.
You know, these people didn't really know
what it was
going to be or how they're going to come across. So, I mean, that's pretty courageous to say yes. And so I understand, particularly in Julia's case, being the first one.
Yeah, me too.
Like, you don't have 50 people before going like, oh, it's going to be fine.
No, and also, like you said, like, radio shows are generally edited. NPR is not just an hour, you know, talking to one person unedited without any sort of publicist to protect you or any sort of situation like that. And also, like, we, you know, as guitarists and teachers and everything, we're always really defensive about our time. At least I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I even you taking the time to do this right now is like, that's a lot. I know it's a big deal. We don't have a lot of time, and when we do have time, we want to spend it with people we love or are taking care of other shit other than music.
Right.
So it's I understand. I think in Rupert's case, he was initially concerned about, you know, he was like, so how are you going to promote this? And I was like, well, it doesn't, you know. And I know he'd be fine with this too. But I think he maybe knew what a podcast was. He just didn't know how. He couldn't really see exactly how this was going to work. And I was just like, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying it. I got to get six of these together. You know, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to. I just know that you know, I can be funny on radio. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I know about the guitar.
So as a platform for you, we've got 100 under your belt. And, you know, did you, in the early stages, where did you want to see yourself by the 100th episode, and where do you perceive yourself at now?
I saw it as a way to be around my peers when I got dystonia. I got dystonia, I couldn't play anymore. So I wasn't going to be at festivals. I didn't really feel that comfortable at concerts. You know, they sort of made me sad. Sometimes they still do. But I was just sort of in a position where I just didn't really want to do the music thing, but also wanted to still talk to musicians and sort of like make sure I was doing it at a time where I was prepared to do it, where I was in the right headspace for it. You know, at that point I was really hurting a lot. I wasn't doing that well. And I was just sort of like, you know, kind of like letting one part of my career go and trying to think about what I was going to do next. But I knew that I wanted to stay connected with the community, because even though I do give the community shit for certain things, I really do value it. I do value the fact that I'm a musician and that I have the luxury of talking to other artists. Like, that's a rare gift. That's a gift that my parents don't have, you know, for example. So I really wanted to spend time talking about it with that. I also thought about it as some way of a promoting. Am I hitting the table too much? Because you and I do exactly the same thing. We put our hands down. We both do this. But now that I'm being interviewed, I'm like slapping the table. I also thought it would be a way to promote whatever was next. And I don't know if it really does that. I don't know if it's going to be a huge vehicle for getting people to concerts. I kind of thought it would. It turns out it's not really. It didn't really do that for my quartet. So at this point, I'm just doing it because I'm doing it more as a podcaster now. You know, I'm doing it more as an interviewer and more to keep on contributing to the guitar in this way while I'm trying to figure out what my next step is as an artist. I know that I enjoy the interviewing aspect the most.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
well, you're exceptional at it. I mean, you're very charismatic. You're very good at the process, like you described. You're putting people at ease and letting their character come out and facilitating that.
Yeah.
And making it seem conversational as well. I mean, I think I had read some comments, like criticisms of yours about like the interruptive nature of your conversation. However, the way a standard interview is conducted, where it's talk, stop, is not very natural. It's the way, and the way you talk is very much like you're having a conversation, so much so that you can forget that the microphones are there. And I think that's something that the listeners might forget. It may not come across as clean cut as a traditional interview on a radio, but in the process of bringing out someone's, or making someone at ease, you kind of need to have that natural approach to conversation.
Yeah, if you're at a dinner table, you're not like back, forth, back.
Right.
My mom actually gives me shit about it. She, last Christmas, was like, but she just can go on. I mean, she just goes on. She basically just gives a speech. And she will listen to this. And I love her, and she's very funny. She's where I get any sort of sense of humor from probably the most. My dad's also funny, but my mom is a killer. And she will just have a story and she'll tell it, and she'll tell it for 20 minutes. And then she'll go on to another story, immediately. So it's like, if I interrupt her, I'm like, so last Christmas we got in an argument because I was like, I'm not interrupting you. This is a conversation. I go, if you want to give a speech, that's cool. Tell me you're giving a speech. I'll go to the bathroom and I'll come back and I'll sit down and you can give me your speech. She's like, get out of here. I'm like, you get out of here. Don't tell me what to do. And the whole problem is that I was home for Christmas alone without a girlfriend, which is I hate being there. So it's like, I'm ready to fight. This Christmas I was with Caroline and it was great. So we didn't fight about anything. But if you put me in a room with my mom when I don't have a girlfriend, it's something's going to happen. And so that's what we argued about. And I think they're right. And I want them to know that these people that I do listen to those, and I don't, I don't get upset about it. Some of the comments are just they're never hurtful, but they do give me a little bit of perspective and they make me sometimes go, all right, well, they're right. I think if there was a Marcin Dila episode that someone commented on, you and I did that back to back.
Right. And he was exhausted.
He was exhausted. And it was just I don't know. If I think something's going on and getting boring, I might interrupt him. But at the same time, I need to also understand when I'm doing that in an interview. I think I do it and I'm trying to do it less. That's something that's come up several times. Obviously it's an issue. I interrupt people. At the same time, you're absolutely right. It has to be conversational. And people are going to get interrupted in a conversation. And also, I am not spending my time here to give someone a billboard for his new album. That's not my goal. That's not the way I want to spend my time. There's not enough money in this for that. They're not paying me for it. Mm-hmm. So if they should get on board with having a conversation.
Another aspect for, the listeners to consider is that I think you've told me a story that you pulled one interview that sort of started but just never went anywhere. Oh, it just wasn't right, so you nipped it in the bud there.
Yeah.
But we don't pull any
one
of these.
Time.
Right, right. And that was, it was completely separate than the fact.
And that was my fault.
But it was these conversations, as we would have a normal conversation with anyone in our lives, some are good, some are bad, with the same people. There's a whole spectrum there. And these ones are just snapshots of an hour in time. At one chat. And also, a lot of the times, we don't have a rapport initially. We've met these people for the first time.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of, you're going to get that in the mix if it's unedited, uncurated material, which is the virtue of the material. But you also, that's part of the flip side, is you're going to get some that don't work out as well as others. It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, that's like you said, you'll go to coffee with a friend one day and you guys will not be able to stop laughing.
Right.
And the next time you go out with them, they're on their phone or something and it's not as much fun. It's just that's the way it is. Yeah. But I think that we do have a job. That's what people should understand, is that we're just trying to do the work, and that's trying to keep it interesting and dynamic and funny and I don't know, light if you can. And then also if there is a moment of heaviness or whatever, being able to jump on it.
Sure.
I don't know. And I want you to know, right now I'm truly being interviewed. It's a different.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic.
It's a different dynamic. Sure. I don't know if you can feel that. But,
well,
I feel like I'm speaking differently.
Okay.
I
remember very clearly being interviewed by you, which was my first podcast experience other than Serial. That's where I got into podcasts. That's the first thing I discovered. And I was like, well, is there one for classical guitar? And lo and behold, there was. But I was definitely in the early, I was nervous. You made a joke when I came up as you must be really into this because you're on time or something like that, because I was right on time.
I'm always on time.
But I was just, it's a nerve-wracking thing for an interviewee, especially if it's, first time with a microphone. It's kind of like having a camera in front of you or up on stage, and because it's new and different, it's nerve-wracking. But by the end of the interview, it's you're just yakking away.
Well, that's the important thing. Even right now, I think, we're going to start off, we're going to be sort of asking questions, and then you start to get in the the sort of mode of acknowledging someone's cadence and then knowing the right amount of time to give air to things, and it's starting to understand the weight of one thought versus the weight of another thought. That's another thing that when, you know, when I don't want to say so much interrupting, but when we're discussing, it does take time. That's why we always do a fade. That's why you and I both have decided to do sort of the fade in the middle of the interview rather than the beginning. Like, okay, we're sitting here with, you know, I mean, that's not generally the way I like to start, because at that point we don't really know what the other person sounds like, especially like if you haven't met them.
Right.
You know, and a lot of these people are from other countries or certainly other regions, you know, and everybody's from a different situation and a different temperament.
A question that I often get when I meet people in person, and they're interested in the amount, the size of the audience out there for this platform. I mean,
interesting. How many people listen to this?
Yeah. And, you know, I found I hit a wall, as I think we've discussed this, but you hit a wall, a ceiling with the classical guitar community.
Yeah.
There's only so many of us out there, and there's only so many of us that will actually consume media in this format.
And there's only so many of us that will consume 100 episodes of something that's over an hour in length. Like, that's like, whoever's doing this is pretty amazing. Like, right. I seriously do not understand why they would want to keep listening. I don't know, though. Like, if I get into a podcast, like, I do these, there's this guy named Jim Jeffers who does like a History of Britain podcast I've been listening to. I'm just like ramming through those. It's like British history. I'm on like episode 90. That's like, you know, I'll just like rip through those. So I think that's what people are doing.
Sure. And you know, it is powerful.
They'll listen to me for like a month or two, you know?
Right. But you know, I think I asked you actually in the last podcast, so maybe I shouldn't ask that same question again, but you know, what is the size of your audience?
The size of my audience is maybe 200,000 total downloads. I think it's somewhere around there. I don't know how that, you know, breaks up. And I mean, that's 200,000.
Hang on,
is that right for you?
Wait, we're two math geniuses at work here. 200,000 divided by 100
is 20. No, that would be 10. 200,000 divided by 10 is 20. So it's
2,000.
Yeah.
Is that even right?
I don't go backwards like that well. You know what I can do now?
People are shaking their heads out there like...
Yeah. Don't get mad at us. Music did not help with
this
my
This is on
math.
The fly and I got a cold. It's my excuse. No. So 2,000, but it's definitely like it ebbs and flows, right? Like, it's some interviews are more popular and some are not.
Definitely. So I don't know. Yeah. 20,000 seems high. 20,000 seems... I think it's two. I don't think 20,000 people are listening to every episode. Jesus, I'd be a rich man.
Right.
I'd be a, you know.
Well, I think that's the point, is that...
That's what they want. Actually, they want 10... That's what they want. They want 10,000 listeners per episode. That's what high-end advertisers want you to have.
So
that's
okay.
The truth.
I mean,
or at least that's what they want.
First of all, I guess I want to round off that by saying, you know, it's a small, concentrated audience, but I think a lot of them are relatively dedicated, like regular.
Absolutely.
Like that. Yeah. Out of that, an episode might fluctuate up to like 8,000 to 10,000. One particular, but in a lesser known person might be around 2 or a bit lower. But there is that core, I think, of about 2,000 listeners. And if you think about, you know, Carnegie Hall, I don't know, what's the main, I don't know how many, that's like 2,000 seats. It blows your mind.
Exactly.
And you think about addressing that many people, and that's a privileged position to be in.
It's awesome.
And it's wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's awesome. It's just, but that's what I kind of try to tell them. I go, I don't know how many people are still reading Soundboard magazine.
Right.
But it's probably not that much.
You know, I'd be completely guessing. I have no idea about print. I really don't. And I, you know, I, they know the sales.
Well, I mean, it's just, I mean, the print over there, that's sort of like they're part of the foundation, and as a benefit, they get the magazine. Chamber of Music America is the same thing. When I'm a member of them, when I have something I need to release, that's like, that's, you know, I get their magazine. So I don't know. That's probably a bad example.
But it's just very hard to tell the amount of consumption and the quality of consumption, as is hard to tell with podcasts. We don't know whether people listen to 5 minutes or the whole thing.
Yeah.
But same with a print.
I assume they listen to the whole thing. I mean, when I listen to a podcast, even the ones that I'm not that into, I usually finish it because all you have to do is just, it's passive.
Right, exactly.
It can be passive. It can be engaged or it can be passive. Yeah. That's the great thing about the podcast is you can do it while you work out. You can sit there and fall asleep to it. You can, you know, there's a lot there that you're listening for rather than just memorizing information.
Yeah.
You know.
So following on from
the
size of the audience, I'm interested then, how does that translate? One of my favorite things are your reads for ads.
yeah, those are fun. Yeah.
What is it? Don't go to that site, it's a porn site.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
Thank you.
I think you should make a t-shirt with that on it.
Don't go to that site, it's a porn site. Well, yeah, so that idea, if people don't know, is that the advertisers for people that are advertising with us for under $10,000, I mean, under 10,000 listeners. So if I have 10,000 listeners for an episode, I start to get into sort of the larger market where they actually give you money.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, where I'm at is sort of like these bigger companies like Casper Mattresses or BarkBox or Audible Trial. Audible.com. They will advertise through a third party, a subsidiary. And then if I sell something, I make money. If they get a click, I make money. And I do make money off those things. But I have to, it takes extra work on the part of the listener. So the listener has to say, they can't go to audible.com, which is what any normal person, they can't because it's a porn site and they'll get arrested. But they have to go to audibletrial.com/insider.
Yeah.
So I get a cut, which is bullshit. It sucks because, so I'm like, Audible Trial is now my direct competition. I mean, audible.com is my competition.
Yeah.
I'm advertising for audibletrial.com/insider.
Right.
So I try and take down the competition by saying they're a porn site, and they totally are.
You know, I have a tip for you.
They aren't.
Let's say you had one of those things that was working particularly well. So Casper Mattresses, right? Let's say for some reason classical guitarists, because they're bad lower backs, are really interested in
I sold mattresses. Two mattresses.
I know, that's kind of great. Yeah. But let's say there's one that just stood out, you're like, wow, they're really into this, right?
Uh-huh.
And you wanted to lower the friction of getting to go to that specific URL.
Yeah.
You could buy a URL called Brett Plays Guitar. Something easy to say.
Right.
And then forward it to that specific URL. So they don't have to actually do all the typing. You could just
That's easy to do.
Go to brettplaysguitar.com and then it forwards and then you still get the same process. I'm just throwing that out.
That's what you can do with a URL, right? You can literally call it something else. Any URL. Well,
it's not calling it anything, it's forwarding it. So like, anyway, I know a lot of podcasters out there will do that instead of
Do you do that?
I don't use the podcast to sort of do
you
that kind
yeah,
of thing.
You
But
you're doing the lessons.
Right, it's some educational focus. But I know a lot of the sort of online marketing, instead of having a complex URL like /this-that, just like brettguitar.com and it forwards you to whatever. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
No, that's a really good idea. Well, every time I'm with you, actually, you give me really good ideas. So that's something that I'm going to look into.
So there's two Casper mattresses. What about BarkBox? Are people getting?
I don't know. It comes in like a thing. Like there's just like a check. And I don't know what it is. It's like CD Baby or something.
Right.
If you remember
that. No, I mean, but like, oh, so you don't find out directly if you. Like,
I mean, it's in there, but I don't really read it. I'm like, just whatever happened happened. Right.
And
don't you sneak by. There's no reason for that.
Hi.
Hey, this is Evita.
I'm so good.
You're wearing my, you know, I told you I have that sweater.
You do.
But the boy version.
The boy version of the sweater.
I got the boy version.
Congratulations, it's your 100th episode?
That's right, that's it.
Is that right?
Yeah, don't know how to treat the old guy here.
Hi.
It's Evita.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I won't bother you guys. I'm on my way to take a master class.
Master class in what?
The teacher is named Chet Walker. Okay. And he's teaching a master class in Jack Cole choreography. And Jack Cole was the guy who did like Sid Charisse choreography and MGM musical stuff.
Oh, like old, like, hello, my darling.
Kind of, yeah.
Like that?
But sexier, yeah.
There's nothing sexy to me singing that.
And I'm really excited. I'm going to go get my butt kicked.
Are you really?
Probably.
Is this what you use for your podcast too?
Sometimes.
Oh, I got to listen. I got to listen. I never listen to anything though, but I'm going to listen to you.
You should.
I know I should. I will. Have fun at your master class.
Thank you. Wish you luck.
Good luck. So what are you saying? What were you saying? You're saying something about how this...
About the Patreon model. Leaping off from the old idea of a patron.
Yeah.
But it's crowdsourcing patrons. So they can be as little as $1 or $10. And maybe they get extra parts of interviews. Or maybe they get sexy photos of you sent to the mail once a week.
Oh, that would be good. I wonder if I can do that. I don't think I look as good as in photos.
But you know,
I'm better in person.
There's one thing.
I'm gonna have to actually go to them.
If there's $1,000 a month, it's like I'll just turn up in your house and you got me for a few hours.
Yeah, I'll have dinner with you.
Yeah,
you could do that too. People would kill for that.
I don't know. I think you'd be better dinner.
People
company.
Wouldn't kill for dinner with me, but I'd like to. The idea. They would give me $50.
A solid
for
20
it.
Bucks. Yeah.
Just $20.
And you bring the pizza.
I would have to bring. Yeah. Fuck. Now it sounds like I'm not gonna get anything out of this.
But I think I know, because, you know, I get to meet some people from my online school, and a lot of them listen to you, and they love it, and they really appreciate it. And
that's good. I'm glad that your people like me, because afraid that your people...
Not at all.
...are, like, I mean, not in... Like, they're, like, they get irritated by me, so they go, and they're like, okay, I'm going to be, like, a Simon guy or whatever.
I got taught a lesson by... I used to work as an usher for many years in Australia, and a friend of mine... There's a whole backstory that I won't bore you with, but he gave me a great piece of advice when I bumped into him again many years later.
Yeah.
And he said, Simon, 10% of people will love what you do, 10% of people will hate what you do, and the rest just don't care.
It's so beautiful.
And I try and live by that because it's so confronting, this whole format. You're putting yourself out there. It's easier for people to complain than to support. But I can tell you, definitely, people will say to me, like, sorry, I don't really listen to your podcast. I listen to Brett's. You know, because it's entertaining.
Well, maybe mine's more... Well, mine's also more... I think there's more of them, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not... I don't see it as a competitive thing.
I don't see it as competitive at all.
I see it as like you're serving... Like,
no.
Just...
We really... I mean, and that works for me.
Sure.
When things get... When the competition element gets added into it, it takes everything out of it for me. I mean, I like competition's a healthy thing, like, you know, getting the numbers up or whatever. But the idea of just everybody in it together is something that I really dig. And it really turns me off when people get protective of their careers.
I made an effort when I first came to New York City. I was very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You know, I sort of had this very idealistic thought of the entire city, which I think everyone does when they first come here. And then they get squashed. No, they don't. That's a bit.
Well, that's what I need. I need to talk to people that are squashed. That's why I can't talk to 22-year-old
people. Yeah, fair enough.
Because they're not squashed yet. Their dreams are still alive and well. I need to talk to somebody who's been beaten, either through a divorce or something happened.
But I made this effort. I made this effort when I first came here. I reached out to other classical guitarists in the city.
Yeah.
And I said... because I was very active at that time performing and traveling.
Right.
I was still trying to do my whole doctoral thing of proving I was a real guitarist.
Right.
I was just taking every gig I could get. And I had a lot of connections. And I said to these other people, like, how about we form a sort of cohort of guitarists where we share our connections and we don't have to chase so much. We just sort of recommend one another and we share the connections.
They don't want the same people coming into the same every year either. They don't like that. The libraries and stuff, they don't like that.
If someone gave a great concert and the promoter knows them to be a good musician, they would trust them. And I didn't reach out to people, to everyone. I reached out to people who I thought were kind of on a similar plane. You know, I'm not reaching out to all the big guns and saying, hey, can I have all your contacts? There's people I was like, we're kind of the same level in our career and everything.
Yeah, you're looking for like a $500 concert.
It wasn't an unbalanced situation. And so the promoter actually, that's called a warm handoff, you know, where you get someone recommending a name and that's the start of the connection as opposed to a cold call. I think everyone benefits, but, you know.
I think you're right.
It's sort of a
scarcity
thing.
That was met by and large with people that didn't.
Not by and large, it was 100%. No.
Well, let's do it. I got a lot of contacts, and I'm not using any of them right now.
Well, I'm not actively. This year, I'm going to push more.
Me too. Okay, get back. You had the same thing. You had the same thing last year. My thing was the middle school. The middle school killed me. At the middle school, I worked at the middle school all year, and then it was just like I couldn't play anymore. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I was getting up at 6:30, and getting home at 8:30. I was like, I didn't want to play anymore. And now this year, like, I'm just like going like, okay, well, what do I play now? My quartet, you know, there was like some infighting, and now they don't want to play with each other. So I don't know what to do.
Well,
and I'm looking to play more. I mean, I love it.
Where are you at with your dystonia? Because I think on one level, when people mention this, it's obviously very personal, and you want to.
Before we talk about my dystonia, which I have no problem talking about, what about you? What are you going to do with your playing? What are you you played with Jacques, you haven't played that much lately.
It seems like
you played over the course of the last 6 months.
I definitely do, absolutely. But compared to the amount of focus I gave it when I was a student, and about the 3 years after the whole doctoral thing, it's nowhere near the same level as intensity as I was learning new repertoire, working with composers, and doing solo.
Well, since
things.
You're married, since you got married,
no, it's not too, that. No? It's Classical Guitar Corner. It's like I put all my time into that.
Well, we're trying to find a way to make money at this. And well, the idea being, like, you make it, and then we'll get back around to it, but it's not the way it works.
Well, that's part of it.
We have to do it while you have to keep playing, or you will not play.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and, you know, part of it is that, yes, I get married, but that's not the reason. It was more that you look to the future and you think, I'm going to have some responsibilities coming up. I mean, you also, we had some hospital experiences over the past couple of years, and that, man, that rings a bell, and you're like, oh, we need to have, we need health insurance, and we need a foundation that we don't go bankrupt through one of these experiences again.
And I mean, when you're with somebody that you want to, you know, that you want to start a life with, or that you're thinking about that kind of thing, that does, you know, that does sort of get you into the headspace of, okay, what am I going to do for money?
I think that it's such an obvious pathway to try and emulate those who seemingly are making their full-time income from performing, which I don't think there are actually that many. And and I think what you're doing, what you describe, there's actually, if you want to be black and white, let's say you tried something and now you stopped, and we can call that a failure, right? Mm-hmm. That's something to be celebrated, because you're hitting at different angles and waiting till something strikes.
Yes.
And I think that's absolutely the way to go. And I think I would encourage more young musicians to do that, because if you just try and keep following in the footsteps of performers, I mean, first of all, you're in amongst every graduate out there that tries that for like 12 months after graduation, and then a decreasing amount after that.
Every year there's a new army of people.
Just go somewhere that there isn't that much competition. And don't, it's no shame in it. There's no, and fail at it and be happy about that. You're trying things and you're failing, and that's the way to move forward.
That's all I've ever done. So that's literally all I've ever done. I think the last time I really had like a really kind of like traditional classical guitar career thing happening was the duo. Mm. That seemed to be going somewhere. There was a constant, every month was more concerts. There were people were excited about it. And then that ended. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was probably 32. And so at that point, that was sort of like, for me, that was the last time I was sort of in it and ready to win. After that, it was like, let's try composing. After that, it was like, after the dystonia, it was like, let's try writing for other instruments. But I feel like I'm kind of losing a little bit of like my ground as far as like just sticking with something. Like, you know, if I compose for those instruments, the personalities of the violinist and the bass doesn't work out. So now the whole thing's over. So what? Just stick with it. Keep writing. Like, you know, that's what happened, is I stopped writing because I had to manage, sort of become a manager for a while. And I don't know if that's really what I should be doing. I think I should just sort of like, I have to get back into the mode of blocking everything out and just sitting there and writing, or just sitting there and practicing. Getting an entire program together, and then pitching it to people, like, that's I miss those days.
Sure,
those are good. That was fun, but it was also very disheartening when, you know, you do your taxes and you've made $20,000 that year. That sucks, and I don't know if I can be doing that at age 50.
So where do you want to take it in the next 100? You started interviewing some people that are not classical players, and I really enjoyed, especially the young guy, the young blues player from...
Jontavious Willis.
He was really interesting to listen to.
That was the best, that's like probably my favorite interview I've ever done.
Mm.
Just because it was actually like two different cultures coming together.
He was just a beautiful person.
And he's just a beautiful person. Yeah, we're talking about a 20-year-old from Augusta, Georgia.
Oh, is he from Augusta?
Is that right? I don't know. Some part of Georgia.
Right.
But not a big part. And like this, in this classical guitar show. It really is about like that. Like his soul just came out, mm-hmm. you know? And we were so excited. He wrote afterwards and he was like, I loved it. He goes, that's my favorite interview ever. I go, really? Thank you, buddy. And he goes, you talk to me when you come in New York. And I just, you know, yeah, it's just, that's the most fun, is just meeting somebody that is so exciting. I don't know why I liked his playing. I liked his show a lot.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot to learn from that guy in that way. We have a lot to learn from people like that, that are able to be themselves, be entertaining, and still maintain a certain level of skill, you know?
Well, I looked up some of his performances on YouTube, and one of the things I liked about it is that I saw a variety of, you know, big stage ones with people milling around and talking, or small ones and little events, sort of, you know, in the living room.
Yeah, he's still
kind of
unknown.
And
yeah.
But it's all the same. Like, there didn't seem to be any sense of grandeur. It's just, he just sits down, chats away, plonks away. I really liked it.
I mean, I did this Christmas jazz gig with somebody, and I never did it before, and it was so much fun. We had everybody singing. Yeah. I was relaxed. I was a beast. I was playing fast. I was, you know, just rocking it because I was so comfortable and because it wasn't a big deal. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm necessarily that interested in the big deal playing.
Right.
Either watching it or being on it. I really like just playing. And I think that classical music doesn't need to be that way all the time, particularly what we're doing. Like, really, we have a salon instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should just be at people's houses having fun. You know what I mean? At least more. Like, that should be more of what we do. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think one aspect that is lost when people try and go into that quote-unquote big
concert
player kind of scene is that they'll look at someone like Miloš Karadaglić and the mm-hmm. daggers will come out and they'll be very critical of this and that and all that. People are very quick to be critical of playing, but in the end, people want to have some sort of relationship with the person performing, and that's where the real connection and value. I mean, all you have to look at is the standing ovation that young kids get from their parents and peers, and the true joy of listening to that experience, regardless of whether it's incredible playing or not. And obviously, there is an inherent value in first tier playing. There's no question about it. However, to develop relationships with people so that they're listening to the music, but they're also enjoying knowing you and receiving you as an audience member in that context. And I think that's a viable place for many people to go, where you don't have to be the absolute best performer player to give someone a truly magical musical experience that's memorable.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing I think you've done phenomenally well is develop a relationship with all these people, and you don't even know.
Yeah.
Because you get a few emails here and there, right? Have you ever met people like in person?
Like at a show, somebody mm-hmm. will be like, oh, I heard your voice. Are you Brett? And I'll be like, yeah. That's fun.
I wish for you that you get more opportunities to meet the people that listen, because I think...
That's my fault. I don't... Yeah.
Well, there's not
I don't
really
go into the community enough. I don't go to concerts enough. Right, I need to. That's my fault. I need to. It's that there's my excuse for it is that I'm always, and that's part of it. I'm sort of like always in this going through something personal over the course of the last couple of years.
Right.
And hopefully that's going to be put to rest where I get more opportunities to just sort of move on. I've been through a lot of stuff personally and relationship wise in the last 2 years. Where I'm constantly kind of, I've been managing that stuff a lot, whether it's moving into a new apartment or being excited about a new person that I'm dating or trying to decide where that's going to go. that takes up a lot of the Fridays and the Wednesdays that the New York Classical Guitar Society is doing. And when I'm not doing that, I have a brother here. Mm-hmm. I've got several really close friends. And I have really good relationships with my students and their parents. And I like staying late at their place. I like that stuff. So that's how I spend my time. And also I go see a lot of music in Brooklyn. We were talking about that when we had dinner the other day. I don't go to so many classical guitar concerts, but I go see music fairly regularly.
Yeah.
You know? And then that's what I've said. And my thing is I think I was excited when I first started doing this about getting back to concerts. I sort of promised that I would. I read Kenny Warner's book, Effortless Mastery, sort of trying to fix my dystonia. And he talked about the importance of going to see concerts and how it's a normal pitfall to sort of either become intimidated or bored by going to see masters. But I kind of rebooted it there for a while, and I started going to a lot more shows, and I was having a pretty good time, but then I got bored again. Because I've done it. Like, I don't need to do the same thing over and over again. Like, there's new experiences for me to have as an audience member.
Yeah.
And new things to inform me. But there is something very important about going to these shows to support them. Sort of, in the interest of being a preservationist,
mm-hmm.
To a degree. But I don't know. I really like having new experiences. And that's kind of how I spend my time. But maybe with the sort of, maybe I think I'm going to take some time and chill out with like all the personal stuff and just really start focusing on the art again and about being part of that society and getting people who I, you know, who've been listening. I don't get that feedback enough
mm-hmm.
in person.
Well, if there are people listening and they have enjoyed Brett's podcast, I ask this. Maybe you could write in and let Brett know you've been listening.
Oh, that's always nice.
And
it is nice.
Well, thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
And congratulations on 100 episodes. That's amazing.
Thank you, Simon Powis. All right, that was my time with Simon Powis. We're going to move on to Mike Gentile, but before we do, make sure you visit classicalguitarcorner.com. Let's move on to my time with my very, very close friend, Mike Gentile.
I don't know. How did it all kind of come together? Like, but tell me how you got into this whole thing.
Before I do, I want to read you the review.
Okay, great. Good.
Okay, so this is on iTunes. This is my favorite review of the podcast. This is from July 11th, 2017. So relatively recently. Brett Williams is bitter. He lives in a small apartment, makes little money, is underappreciated, and has gout.
Well, that,
but
that's, so far he's just spitting facts.
So far it's all, so far so good. But he's also a fantastic player with an amazing insight into the field and a lot of famous friends who just happen to be passing through the greatest city in the world. These are open and honest conversations about the industry, guitar technique, musical history, and anything else that passes through Brett's wild mind.
That actually is a great review.
I love this man.
Yeah. What's his name? Woman. Or her name?
Her name is Marcus.
Well?
Marcus D137. So he's probably great. 37 years old.
Well, I don't know if he updates his screen name every year.
God.
But,
it depends on how long he's at iTunes.
I think that's a lovely review.
How did I get into it? You'll just like that review?
Yeah, it's a great review.
So as my friend, maybe we could, you know, how did I start it?
Maybe I think you're getting at maybe we establish why we're friends or something like that.
Well, okay. No, I mean, I think that the thing is you asked like what got me started.
Yeah. I'm a dear friend of Brett's. I know nothing about classical guitar, but I've known Brett for
Well, that's why you're here. You're here as the Joe on the street, which is what we did. We started a podcast that we've canceled and gotten rid of because you are an advertising, you know,
person.
You're a BBDO.
Yeah.
You are the vice is it okay for me to say this?
Sure.
Vice president of production at one of the biggest ad firms in the entire world.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. And you started out not being that way, so that's why we're friends. Because I don't know if you'd be my friend anymore.
Of course I would be your friend. You have a lot to offer.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, why do so many people... it's like you said, famous friends.
Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Thing.
What happened? What do you think happened?
Well, this isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think things are going fine for you in certain ways.
You know they're not.
They're fine.
It's okay. So how did I get started? We got started doing that, and then you pulled out because you wanted to go to work.
Yeah, and I got a little nervous about being candid on the subject of advertising.
And I was the Joe on the street, and you were sort of the resident expert.
Yeah, right.
And I thought it was the best idea I ever had. We went to B-flat down in Tribeca, which is a Japanese jazz bar, and I pitched you on the idea.
Yeah, and it was really...
And I was like, I think this is going to be the best thing anybody's ever heard.
I think it really would have continued on, you know, and
you
seen
were like,
some
why
success.
Why don't you do it with Chris Henry?
Yeah. I think it would have seen some success. I think anyone, you know, when you go home, you work in advertising, you go home for the holidays, you've got uncles pitching you ideas, you've got like people kind of coming up to you saying things like,
I've never tried to pitch you on.
You never have. Yeah, you never have. And I'm not in the ideas generation side of the business anyways. But everyone thinks you're an advertising expert or a critic. And that's the fun with advertising. And that was the fun with the podcast. Is that
we could do it.
Yeah. And you having the kind of on the street perspective was the most charming.
We should make it clear. We did is we would watch a commercial. And this was all audio. And we would, on Facebook, give a link to the YouTube thing so people could watch along if they wanted to. But it was all audio. We would watch a commercial, have a couple of drinks, and then just sort of crack up about the commercial or just, like, talk about how amazing it was.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
and
exactly.
How effective it was.
And maybe how it came together.
I would say some funny stuff. You're the funniest guy I know. So you would just go, and we would both be funny, but then you would actually have interesting things to say from an advertising perspective.
Right, yeah.
And I had sort of...
Because there's a lot typically that goes into making...
psychology thing going on.
Yeah.
I think.
That was fun.
I'm just an idiot.
So we did that for probably about 20 episodes or so.
So much fun.
I think it was a good time.
It's a much better podcast than this one.
That's not true. No, this is a great podcast. This is a really good podcast.
And that was, you know, now we're talking about we started 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
I mean, not
for sure.
Not true. Is it?
Well,
it was 2018, 2010, because I knew my solo album came out the same time we did it.
You're right. Yeah.
So that was 2010. It was when we started
It was a while
podcasting.
Ago. It was a real, like, I all of
Nobody
the
was
technology
podcasting back then.
And the
Nobody.
Software.
Now it's a joke.
Yeah. Now it's like kind of plug and play and everyone's doing it. We were pioneers, Brett. Let's be honest.
We were.
But now you've got 100 episodes under your belt. And I think people are dying to know, who is Brett Williams? How did he start playing guitar? Why is he still in the game? Why isn't he working in advertising or doing something that's like more 9 to 5? And you're still participating in the hustle of being a musician. Clearly comes with its frustrations and its high moments. I think you're amazing. If you guys haven't seen Brett perform, it's an absolute treat because, again, he's such a generalist at, you know, everyone's having a good time, no matter if you care about guitar or if you don't. He's cracking jokes. He's, you know, doing all of the he's an entertainer. You are an entertainer.
And if I'm playing well, it's magical.
Exactly.
If I'm not playing well, it's still fun.
That's the thing. Yeah. And I think you've admitted to having a couple rough nights before, particularly when you were recovering from dystonia.
Right.
But everyone's having a good time and the mistakes aren't important. So, anyways,
they're part of the charm.
See Brett if you can. That's good. And, you know, do everything else as well. Donate and buy Richard Sage guitar.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Sage?
Well, yeah, but he doesn't make the guitars. It's savageclassical.com.
Mm. Long time sponsor.
The best sponsor in the business.
Good. He's
now I don't even need to do the read.
Does he need a commercial? Maybe we should write a commercial for him and film it.
With a jingle.
Well, yeah. But does he need a commercial? I bet we could do that for him.
Yeah.
Do it on the cheap.
With like a mom and a kid?
I don't know. Whatever he wants. We'll write him an ad.
Yeah.
And we'll film it.
Oh my God. How much
fun. You can give that to him as a gift.
Oh, he would go bananas.
Yeah. The media is the trickiest part. I don't know.
I mean, people need to understand. We're talking about like you're like Budweiser, Coca-Cola, General Electric. Like this is, that's you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not Coca-Cola. Pepsi.
Not anymore.
Oh, and not
Pepsi. How are we going to do that? Oh, you got Mountain Dew too, don't you?
The agency has Mountain Dew, yes. All products I enjoy.
Why am I not in advertising? I don't know, Mike. Why am I not in advertising? I'm not in advertising because it's really hard to change careers when you're 40.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to do something that's in super high demand. In other words, like, we have these jobs. We need these jobs to be filled. We need people for these jobs, right. i.e. education, special education, middle school education, government jobs, stuff like that. Now, that's quite a leap for me.
Yeah, I hear
to
you.
To go from being a creator to... I think that's the thing. I think that we are always under the assumption... You know, I went back for Christmas, and I love my mom. But I can tell she's fading a little bit. She's sort of like, all right, time to move on with the music stuff. You're now 40. You know what I mean? Like, you need a job. You need this. And I'm like, Mom, I am. I would love to have a job. But who's... It's like you said... You told me that in these big companies, the assumption is that guitarists are just sitting there thinking like, well, you know, I've got this option to suddenly become a working person. There's no option there, really.
Right.
There's not companies waiting for people with music degrees to come work for them after they've been, you know, embittered, you know, sitting in a cauldron of, bitterness for 20 years. Like, you don't want that. You want someone who... has a background, has a portfolio.
Yeah.
And who you can justifiable hire, I believe is the word you used.
I hear that, of course. Right. Unless there was an immediate, I was like, friend or family relationship. But it's really not even that easy.
It's not that easy.
Really is about,
like you said, you got to justify it with the brass. Portfolio.
Yeah. Which you have, which is the cruelest part of the whole thing, is you're very talented and smart and funny and you have interesting insights. And that's really all an advertising creative does. They extract those things and put them into a piece of creative media, you know, and you're highly capable of all those things, but you have invested 41 years of your life into this instrument.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean,
do you have regrets about that?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I talked about it on Simon's podcast once, but, yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, this is going to be bitter because this is an interview. I don't want this to be all bitter because I do like a lot of aspects of my life.
Of course.
But those are mostly cultivated through just personality and, you know, and getting along with people, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, I can get up during the day and have a pretty good time just hanging out with people.
Sure.
Or talking to people or making them feel good or stuff like that. So yeah. That's sort of where I get my joy. And I get joy through music, but I think that thinking that I was going to, I think when I was young, when I was real young, I wasn't thinking about having a family or getting married or wanting to live in like a particularly nice town like New York City. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see that when I was 19. I remember I thought I would live in a house just like my guitar teacher's house. Mm-hmm. Terry Mills, who taught at the University of the Pacific, was my sort of teacher when I was young. And I remembered he had this sort of very California Spanish one-story house with like little alcoves carved into the wall, if you can imagine that. And he always had like a fresh rose and a thing and his guitar and his little guitar nook and his pot on the, you know, just very, just sort of, you know, maybe divorced, just beautiful lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But then I decided, oh, I don't want to live in Stockton, California, in a nice house with an alcove and the highest crime rate per capita.
Right.
I wanted to not live there anymore. And then my taste just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, you know, you date somebody and they want to do something too. They want to go on a vacation. And you're like, well, I don't want to give that person that vacation. Then you go on the vacation. Then you like the vacation, you know? And then you like the TV. Then you like the bike. And so I started wanting to do things that were outside of the realm of what Terry Mills was doing in Stockton, California, you know, and I think I kind of, you know, so now I've got this sort of big budget life, but I can't really afford to do that with my education.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's, I guess that's sort of what happened there as far as like why I have a regret. I just think that I didn't really foresee myself as needing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I foresaw myself as a true artist that would die trying. And now I'm like, I don't get to die right now. I have to also live this life.
Sure.
And be, and your child is my goddaughter.
True. That's true.
And it's like, I want to be part of that life. Like I would have never, if you asked me at 19, I would have been like, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to be a godfather. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think that way. I thought that I would just be this rogue.
Yeah.
And right. It's been a long time of me not wanting to be a rogue. I haven't wanted to be a rogue for a long time.
Well, when you look at the people you came up with and yeah. your peers currently in the industry, are you seeing success, you know, in those relationships? Are you seeing people who are doing the things that you wish you were doing? Or does that not exist in a real kind of like musician, dare I say, rock star way, right? Is everyone in this industry in 2018 having to live modestly because there's not money in classical music?
Yeah, I think people are, the people that I see that are successful are living relatively modestly. Like they don't spend as much money as say I do, you know?
You think?
I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, or they have some money backing them up. I mean,
yeah.
The cynical part of me wants to say like, oh, they got money backing them up. But then I actually go out with these people and, you know, they don't have three beers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
two shots and, you know, then go out the next day and do the same thing. Go to a show.
Sure.
You know, go eat a fancy dinner. Not really fancy, but just eat at a bar or something
sure.
like that.
Yeah.
That's not the way that my guitar friends live. They live yeah. modestly. They control themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that that's definitely part of it. I don't see too much success for people in their 30s. I see people being very successful in their 20s. And then people kind of just working through it, kind of just chugging along after yeah. that, you know. And then there are the certain cases where there are like the blessed ones. Who have the positions at Yale and stuff like that.
What are their expectations in regards to your setup or you as Brett Williams? And have you ever had a moment where, you know, they've been maybe surprised that this is just literally two microphones and a laptop?
Oh, yeah. Especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some of them were quite
And you're alone. You don't come with any sort of producer or audio engineer. It's really the one-man band Brett Williams show.
They definitely don't want to come out to Brooklyn if they're not from New York.
Yeah,
on a train,
right.
Take the 7 down to the G, get out, you know, with the, you know, there's a couple of shady people in that corner in front of the McDonald's. Like, you know, I got to be sensitive to that.
Totally, totally.
So if I'm dealing with a situation like that, I do everything I can to make people feel comfortable, but depending on sort of, you know, who I'm dealing with, I, you know, if it's somebody young and sort of just making their way and, you know, I don't need to have them on or it's not like a huge, and I don't mean to be offensive because the big part of the show is for me to give equal time to both the celebrities and the people kind of coming up.
Yeah. Right.
Or the people that are just trying to make a statement or people that just deserve a voice, whether I like them or not. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people that I don't like,
yeah,
or that I didn't initially like, and I feel like it's my job with the tone of the show to find something that I like about them,
right?
You know,
yeah,
and then approach them that way because then, you know, my light sees their light,
right?
And then we can connect on that
makes
level.
Makes sense, yeah.
So that's what I, you know, yeah.
You're 100 episodes in. Where do you see the show going? Do you have its half life? Do you have more in you?
Oh, dude, you know, okay, so there's personal shit going on.
Right.
There's a breakup going on right now that you know about.
I do. I didn't know if we were going to talk about that.
It's fine. I don't know if we'll talk about it, but it's there has been so many things that have happened over the last 2 years that have sort of interrupted the trajectory, I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of movement, moving between places all the time. Now, you know, from this neighbor to this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one relationship to a life of being single to another relationship to trying to make these things work. And I'm not saying that has been a distraction, but I was in a middle school all year last year. You know, and that yeah. completely threw everything into the shitter.
Yeah.
Now that I think about that, like as far as where the quartet was going and stuff like that, I don't mean that it's in the shitter, but I mean that, you know, this is, I don't know. I'm trying to do this as much as I can, but as far as like seeing a future for it, there are points where I have this clarity and then I try something and it doesn't necessarily work. Yeah. So right now I'm just trying to keep it going. But I think over the summer we had the thing where I came in And I did, I went into the University of Illinois and did that Krannert Center performance.
Right, thing. Yeah.
And I thought, that's the future, is I'm going to take this, I'm going to shop this to different festivals. I'm going to say, I can come, you can pay for me, you know, pay me the rate that you'd pay a performer,
mm-hmm.
and then I will cover your festival.
Mm-hmm.
I'll cover every player, I'll get interviews, we'll talk about it, you'll get a ad space on the next, you know, 6 or 7 episodes. We'll make it right.
That sounds like a very smart model.
It's a very smart model, but I think that was what that's the last thing I dealt with, and that sort of tanked a little bit because
in what way?
Well, it's just these people are trying to cut costs, not add costs on. You know?
I hear you.
The arts.
Maybe you're providing content. You know what I mean? You're giving them additional.
Yeah.
You know. You know, things that they're not getting by just having this isolated festival somewhere in the middle of America. You're giving them media and other kind of forms of distribution. So there's a lot of value there.
Yeah, I think there's value.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a great idea. It's one of those great ideas that I just don't know if who I'm talking to is going to really get it. And at first, podcasts were like that for these people.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started this 4 years ago, this was not something that classical guitarists knew about. At all.
And now there's a couple other podcasts out in
yeah.
the world.
Oh, there's a couple other, you mean classical guitar
podcasts? Yeah.
Oh, just podcasts.
Yeah. Well, no, classical guitar podcasts.
Oh, yeah, there yeah. are. Yeah, for sure.
Which seemed like they kind of followed your lead.
Yeah,
just
I think so.
Having, you know, been a fan of your show and hearing of one or two kind of coming up.
There was a guy, Scott Wolf, who did a show in Los Angeles, and there was me. And I think that was it for a while. Then Simon Powis came
yeah.
along, who's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And was nice enough. He asked me if he could start the podcast,
right?
Which he didn't need to do at all, you know. And we share ideas. We support each other. We, you know, he sponsors the show.
It's great.
It's. I like that relationship. I like that openness. And that's something about the guitar world that I do like. Is that, or at least, I had a girlfriend who was a singer. When I was in college and I was a guitarist, and when I went to Texas, we all shared ideas. We all played for each other. We all cheered each other on. It was a really kind of like, you know, there were dicks, mm-hmm. you know, but it was like, mostly it was like an environment of us trying to give each other the answers.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't too much competition because with a big program like that, you've got people that are, you know, freshmen to people getting their doctorate, it's like very rarely, and it's such a small, they don't let that many people in. So there's usually only like one freshman, and then there's like a gap, and then there's a junior and a senior, and then there's like, you know, 3 masters, and then there's, at least this is the way it was back then there's like, you know, 3 or 4 doctorate guys that are going off. So they're all competing, and they'll help me, and then I'll, you know, go in there and I'll help the freshmen or whatever, and mm-hmm. then the, you know, or whatever, and back and forth. So it was a really kind of like open dialogue between us. Whereas the singer, she was always complaining about the level of competition between each other. I'm starting to feel a little more competition now because it's just so dire.
Yeah.
But we really support each other,
mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, we want everybody to succeed, I hope. You
yeah,
know? So
sure.
When someone wants to start a podcast and they become successful like Simon has, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, and he became successful through hard work and organizing his website and sort of creating, like, he gives online lessons and he created a community that way. So he really worked hard at doing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas I was sort of, you know, I work hard at making sure that the things are funny, that they're kind of loose, that they're
yeah.
gritty, that there's, you know, that there's that sort of, you know, punk element to it that is there, but it's not always natural, and it takes cultivation.
Sure.
And it takes time, and it takes pacing around the kitchen thinking about what
interesting. Yeah,
you're going to do and how you're going to, you know, present yourself.
The podcast up until even episode 99 still comes across, and I mean this as a compliment, very raw, in the sense that it feels yeah. like you're opening your laptop, more or less hitting record and going for it. And
yeah.
if there's construction outside, or if there are things happening in your life, or if you're like Googling something, you'll take that 20 seconds, breathe into the microphone.
I know.
No, and I love that. And I think everyone loves that.
Well, I'm trying to get rid of so much of that.
You are.
Yeah, well, the podcast episodes now are like 40 minutes, and they were over an hour.
Sure, and they were huge in file size, and again, at the time, they weren't really mixed. Appropriately, but again, that was
they're never going to be mixed appropriately,
and I think that's fine. But
these are our $20 microphones. You bought this,
you're kidding. Well, that's great.
You and I split the cost of this at Guitar Center of this little Alesis Mix Mic 4,
right? This is the actual one,
this is it.
Oh my god,
this is our podcast.
That's great. That's so kind of what I'm talking about, which I love, and that's why your podcast to me has, and maybe to other individuals who have found you and don't listen or are not necessarily part of the classical guitar community, it has a very kind of approachable and very layman approach to it, which I always found very charming. And I wonder, I don't know if, have you talked to anybody who is not into classical guitar yet, happens to be a fan of the podcast? Or in your experience, it's a pretty kind of like guitar-centric show.
It's a guitar-centric show.
Yeah, I imagine.
You know,
the people
who listen to the intros are generally... And I think some guitarists listen to the intros and enjoy it, they say, the most. But really, I mean, you know, the show is there to sort of create a community and create an opportunity for generally people that don't get to talk.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not really there for the intros so much. I love the intros, and if I wasn't able to do the intros, there's no way I would do this podcast. I wouldn't, because I'm already 99 people talking about their guitars. Done.
I hear you.
Wrap it. It's done. But as far as like being able to, you know, get on there and sort of just talk and share, and try to be funny, you know, and stuff like that, or try to be interesting.
Entertaining as you are.
Well, it makes my mind think about what's going on. I'm forced to think about it. When I practiced a lot, you know, I'm not practicing that much right now. But, you know, when I practice a lot, I record myself not just so that I can listen to it and scrutinize, but because it's a go time. You're making a recording. Mm-hmm. You can't stop just for a second and fix something. Like you gotta do it right.
Right.
So I think like that's the thing with this. It's like when we get this going, we knew that when we did the first podcast, the Guys Night Out podcast.
Right. Yeah.
With everybody.
There's even an older podcast from the advertising podcast, Guys Night Out.
But do you remember the feeling about how special it is? Because you're not at a bar, you're not at a restaurant, you're not checking your phone.
Yeah.
You're sitting there and you're looking. I'm looking directly in your eyes, and we're talking for an hour or for however long this is. It's that kind of connection and that kind of demand on you mentally to communicate with somebody I've never had in my entire life.
Right.
I should probably do it with Caroline.
That would be good. Probably. I've never looked in your eyes as long as I have in the last 20
right
minutes
now,
of my life.
This is great. Because when we did do it, we would sit there and stare at the screen and sit next to each other.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
In the Upper East Side.
And now I'm staring directly into your face.
Now you're staring directly into
your
face.
Beautiful face.
Now you can tell that it's like, now you can really see my age.
Yeah, oh my God.
Under these lights, the above head
definitely
lighting.
Definitely, 41.
Yeah, there's like some stuff on my forehead now.
No, you're fine. You look great.
It's orcish. I look like a Lord of the Rings orc a little bit on the forehead. Just but everything else is great.
Speaking of Lord of the Rings...
Please.
I want to hear, as I already know, Brett Williams outside of guitar. Have you kind of revealed that to other guitar players and on this show? Probably more than I'm aware of, but like...
I try to.
There's kind of this video game side of Brett. Brett, you have like...
Board games?
No, well, all game, really. Like
drinking?
Lots of different gaming of all sorts.
Yeah.
You know, there's... You know, you love your Xbox and you love board games. You love board games more than I think anybody loves board games. You've got shit tons of them. And you always
want
a game.
Play them.
That's the thing. Anytime we sit down with drinks, Brett is eager to jump into a game. Is that because you're just kind of wanting to satisfy some sort of itch in your brain that like wants to be like thinking critically? Or do you just want to like... turn kind of like conversation into this kind of interesting social dynamic with game? Like, what do you think that gaming obsession is of yours?
Okay, well, I think it's actually got a lot to do with things. It generally becomes very strong when things are going wrong.
Does it?
Yes.
So things are perpetually going wrong, which is why you... play games all the time.
No, sometimes I don't. Sometimes,
like when
I always love games. I wish I could. The only time I didn't play so many games was when I was single, and it was just
there's no time then. You're kind of trying to meet people.
Well, it feels bad to sit alone when you know that loneliness is not going to stop.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, when you know there's the clock, you could just sit there forever.
Yeah.
No one would stop you.
No one would remind you.
No one would remind you. No one would require you to get up to go to. So I didn't play games until I was like probably 26, 27. Wow. 26.
Like even video games?
Nothing.
That's incredible.
No, like, TV and no games.
When we shut this down tonight, like if I hadn't brought it up right now, I think you would have been like, do you want to play a game?
Oh, I mean, I didn't want to do this at all. Is it Saturday?
It's Saturday
at
night.
8:30.
It's bitter cold outside.
But you have a baby, so to you, this is like all you can do.
Well, Natalie, my wife, is having a girls' night in the apartment.
Is she really? Who's there?
Other moms in the neighborhood.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Last night I kind of had a dad's night.
With the guy?
With all of the dads who Natalie's now hanging out with.
And
their
you
wives.
Love them.
They're good guys. I'd love for you to meet them, actually. I think you'd like them. I thought about that multiple times. I'm like, I think Brett would like these guys.
I like dads.
Very awesome guys. I like dads.
Well, I would like to hang out with more dads. You know, last night I wasn't with dads.
Did you see our friend Nelson last night?
I did. It's his birthday.
It was his birthday.
And we did the original podcast with him, too.
Well, that's why I brought him up, because we did Guy's Night Out.
Yeah, I think the games are like, they're really, as far as board games, I think there's nothing communal about playing a video game with somebody. There's no communication. There's no break. You know, if you're playing Call of Duty with somebody, you're not chatting.
Yeah, right.
You're playing the game. You're not speaking. You're not looking. You're not with them in any way. And if you are with them, you're not in the game.
Yeah.
So you and I have talked about how we don't like getting into chatty rooms playing Destiny or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I guess like this podcast in a way, it is a game in a way, right? Like I think it requires intense concentration. You're trying, it's almost, you know, it's a game of Pong in a way where you're trying to kind of receive information and hit them back with, you know, kind of your perspective or your point, and really that's kind of a tabletop game where you're kind of taking in all of those nodes of communication and making a move, which is incredibly hard. I don't even remember anything that is coming out of my mouth in this particular podcast, so I can't believe again that you've done as many shows.
It's pretty how does your brain feel? Doesn't it feel limber?
It definitely feels like
it feels challenged.
I'm not getting the words that I want to like come into my brain and leave my face.
That's a sort of like Zen relaxation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're good at this, I can tell, better than I am. And again, unprepared. And
It didn't take that long to get good at that. But I that's the thing is like, you know, I don't know. Where is the podcast going? I don't know whether to make it. I think a classical guitar podcast needs to be more about classical guitar than those earlier episodes were. I think that I just was sort of like, 18-minute intro? Cool. Let's do it. It's funny.
Do you limit yourself now? Do you have structure?
No, I limit myself. I try to have more structure. Yeah, I do editing.
Yeah.
Obviously, I got together with Mike, talked about making things sound better, bringing the volume up so people don't have to turn their earbuds up to 90, and I'm still, you know.
On the subway, it was kind of hard to hear it at all because I had just the ambient noise of the subway.
Yeah.
Going against Brett Williams.
Well, let me tell you what I got going on.
All right.
All right, we got a single EQ, all right? And what we got, the single EQ, I don't know how to tell you.
Do you not know?
The frequency, the slope, and the Q factor.
Well, that's fine. I'm sure this will sound great.
The cute factor. I don't know. Yeah, there's no way to explain this stuff.
Question for you. How is your dystonia?
It's still there.
It is.
Yeah, totally.
Does it haunt you?
I think
from a performance level, I remember saying that.
I think I was on my way to something.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was being a soloist or whatever, but I think there was a trajectory.
And that was
I was about to do APAP, Arts Presenters.
Okay.
Which is a huge conference. I put thousands of dollars into doing the showcase and had to cancel it.
Wow.
I don't want to trouble the world with any more of my ideas.
What do you mean by that?
I don't want to fucking make another album that I have to tell everybody, oh, this is a good album.
Right.
You're going to like this album.
What? Do you want to write? And do you want to record?
I want to write and record, yes.
So maybe
fuck the dystonia. It doesn't do any... I still have three good fingers and a brain.
Yeah.
But I think I need...
Maybe that's the title of the album.
Three good fingers and a brain.
But, I mean, you do want to write. I mean, you are, like you said, you're a creator. You make things.
But I want to make things. I want to make anything. I want to write anything. I don't want to just write music. I just want to do anything creative.
Is it possible for you to write and record and not have a big album release type plan?
You know, like just one at a time. Like,
well, is it cathartic?
Nowadays?
Is it cathartic to you to simply write and record?
It is, but it's short lived, my friend.
Okay, yeah.
It is. You know, painting at the beach house is not going to, you know.
Sure.
Not going to make someone whatever the great painter is.
I think the thing that I've always been fascinated with in regards to musicians in my life is their quest for fame. And I feel like it's been a...
You're talking about just your friends, like we know who we're talking about.
Exactly.
The people that want to be rock stars.
Exactly. There's always something
which
a little
icky. Those people
icky.
Are going away.
It's a little
at
icky.
Your age, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it kind of needs to. Yeah.
They have to stop.
They're going to have to stop, but maybe they won't. Maybe they will
now
be.
Now I sound like,
somebody who at 34 decides that they're not going to stop and they're going to pursue it for as long as they can and they make
they
music.
Should.
And
they should.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
we need more of them.
Yeah.
We need more mature pop musicians.
But where have you been in regards to fame? Did you visualize fame at a young age?
No, I never visualized fame. I did, I guess. Yeah, no, I visualized
fame. I imagine anyone who treats music as professionally as you have has the fantasy of seeing themselves in a concert hall on stage performing in front of large numbers of people
and
getting
that.
Those applause and that feeling good.
That is the best thing. It is the closest thing to a religious experience I've had is having a great performance early on a Sunday or something.
Mm.
Even just if it's, you know, out at a just a good one where it's solid. You had a nice big audience. The audience received it. You got the right praise, and you got to drive home. That drive home is just, it's the best.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. But I've also gotten things close to that when, like, I do a really good job at a job.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you've gotten that experience, too.
Sure.
And that's something that we, as musicians and artists, don't get enough of, is that euphoria of going home from work with a job well done.
Right.
Not just with your head hung low, exhausted, but with a project that's completed.
Interesting.
So, yeah, like I, that'll keep you going.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important, and I'm trying to experiment with the idea of not keeping it going and not letting it destroy me or create a bitter person. I don't want that to happen either.
Yeah.
Because I think people do stick with it.
Yeah.
And then they're walking around in the cold with their guitars and they're all pissed off giving this kid a lesson and. It's all that shit. Like, that's what I do. I walk around doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I do. I walk around with a little fucking guitar, and it's freezing out, and I'm just sitting there with a red face teaching kids that are going, your face is red. But... 100th episode.
100th episode.
And you're on it. You wanted to do this.
I wanted to do this so long ago, and I really feel like I blew it.
Oh, man. We are killing it. We're like over an hour. We're just talking now. This is
You're going to edit this down a lot, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to edit it down a lot. We're on a roll. We're
is anything
a,
in here usable?
You don't think so?
I mean, I think it's great.
No, you don't.
No, I do. It's great.
It's good.
It's interesting, I think, to learn more about you and get your perspective on these things as you've been interviewing all of these... individuals who have probably been, you know, to some degree guarded and filtering, you know, for whatever reason, or coached into, you know, keeping things with on a certain track. But you've always, you know, been very open and honest, which is why the show to me has been so entertaining.
And that's why I'm a good friend, right?
That's why you're a great friend.
And
you are a good
friend.
That's
why I'm a good boyfriend.
I'll say it here right now.
I think even though, you know, relationships have gone into the shitter, I'm still a great boyfriend.
You're a great boyfriend.
I'm the best.
And you might be available pretty soon.
I am.
So this is.
I'm not really right now. Yeah, let's talk about that.
You already said your girlfriend's name, which I'm surprised.
She's the best.
I've never heard her name on this show though.
Caroline?
You say her name?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
You haven't listened for a while.
I hear she is my girlfriend, but I haven't.
No,
in a while.
Yeah,
you know why? It's because I used to take the M train. I used to listen to you a lot on the M train. Now I'm on the L.
Well, I used to rail
interrupted
on,
service.
I feel bad because I used to kind of rail, not rail, but I used to kind of like tell all about the Wendy breakup.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to do that this time.
Well, I think
because
this...
Caroline's like super cool, and I'm going to still pursue this lightly. but for right now, we're not going to. I'm just not, we can't live together right now.
Yeah.
She has to go and she has to do whatever she has to do.
Yeah.
And we're gonna do that.
I think that's fine.
As far as like being single, I don't know. This time, you know, I kind of rushed into the dating thing like super, you remember. Like I just was like all about it. I got on the Tinder, the Bumble, the Dumble, I just did all of it.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know why I did the Tinder, the Bumble. It's like a fucking,
did you write
like
that
Roseanne,
joke?
Roseanne Barr. The Tinder, the Dumble, the Dumble, but the
laugh track.
Yeah, jeez.
You should put a laugh track at when you say, edit that in.
Dumble.
Dumble.
Yeah, so I met her, we were introduced to each other. Calm down and wait. You know? Maybe I'll go the hooker route.
I don't think you should do that.
Okay.
You should not go the hooker route.
Okay.
I have to pee really bad. Is that allowed?
Didn't I just pee?
No.
I feel like I just peed.
You didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you can pee. Should we?
Can you end it like that?
Yeah. That's it, folks. Guys, thank you for listening to 100 of these. Thank you for taking the time to listen to just me talk for the last, I don't know what this is going to end up being, 2 hours. I really, really appreciate it. All right? Nothing else. That's all I want to say. 100 episodes, and the fact that I've got anybody listening to this is a blessing. So thank you very much, and I'll see you for episode 101 very soon. Thanks for your patience. And thanks for the love.